one who is so learned that all other learned persons worship him. And because he was so learned, he could disobey the order of his so-called spiritual master. He had no fear of any condition of material existence. Anyone cared for by Lord Vishnu does not need to care about anyone else. Thus, Bali Maharaj could never be bereft of all opulences. The opulences offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not to be compared to the opulences obtained by Karma Kanda. In other words, if a devotee becomes very opulent, it is to be understood that his opulence is a gift of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such opulence will never be vanquished, whereas the opulence achieved by one's fruitive activities may be vanquished at any moment. Oma Gyana Tamarandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The other morning in class, there was some discussion about the subject matter of wealth, knowledge, fame, beauty, these things that we know as opulences. Actually, I was wondering whether this word opulence is part of ISKCON speak, whether it's just something that we use and people don't understand what we're talking about when we say opulence. There are a lot of words like that that are just common to devotee parlance, and people really don't understand them. I'm not sure whether opulence is one of them or not, but we were talking in class, some discussion of opulence and how Krishna deals with devotees, with his devotees, by taking away opulence. Hari, he takes away opulence. So after class, one of my friends was telling me a little interesting story in this regard. He said that his in-laws came to visit him. He's from India. His in-laws from India came to visit him. When they came into the house, they saw the temple room that they had. And there was a deity of Krishna there. And naturally, just like Shamsundar, that their deity of Krishna had his flute. So when they saw the flute, they said, oh, this is very bad. Krishna has his flute, because the flute, when he plays his flute, that's when he takes away all the opulence. So be careful. You can have Krishna, but don't have his flute, because if he plays the flute, then everything will go away. So this idea of opulence and being devotees of Krishna, these are rather perplexing subject matters. I mean, most of us, we're householders, we worship Krishna. Certainly we're not hoping that by such worship all our opulence goes away, otherwise what will we do? Simply for maintaining our life, maintaining our family. So it's a rather perplexing subject matter, opulences and the worship of Krishna. Here we see that Bali Maharaj has decided to do that, and as a result, Achirad Brashyase Shriyaha. This is the curse that Sukracharya has given to Bali Maharaj. Achirad Brashyase Shriyaha. Very soon, you will be bereft of all your opulence. And so he's given this curse because, as explained in the first line of the verse today, Duridam Pandita Managya, you're thinking that you're a very learned person and therefore that you can disobey my order, disregard what I have to say, therefore, Achirad Brashyase Shriha. Very soon, because of this attitude you have, very soon you'll be bereft of all your opulence. And so in the purport, Srila Prabhupada points out that this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur focuses his commentary on in this verse. This question of whether or not Bali Maharaj actually deserves this curse. Achirad Brashya Se Sriyaha. Very soon you'll be bereft of all your opulence, he says, but why? How is that justified that he can curse him like this? It's because, as explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that these words, Panditamani, he's understanding these words, he's presenting these words, that you're falsely claiming yourself to be a learned man. That's why it's justified for you to be cursed like this, for you to lose all your opulence. Not that he wasn't a fair man. Sometimes we portray Sukracharya as self-interested, blindly making some judgment. But if you make a judgment, you have to give the reason. So his judgment is, Achirad Brashya Seshriyaha. You'll soon be bereft of all your opulence. Why? Because you are Panditamani. You think you're intelligent, but you're actually falsely intelligent. Of course, as Vaishnavas, followers of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, we accept Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's understanding of these words to be Panditamanyagya, one who is actually so learned that other learned persons worship him. That other learned persons worship him. Panditamanyagya. That's the actual position of Bali Maharaj. And so one might wonder that if Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that you are Panditamanagya, that you're so learned that other learned persons worship you, then what's the proof? What's the proof that you're not liable for this curse, Achirad Brashya Seshriyaha, that you lose all your opulences? What's the proof? And so that's the question. What is the proof? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, commenting on the Bhagavatam, obviously is commenting for our benefit, so he wants us to benefit. So he wants us to be Panditamanagya also. So how are we to attain that stage? Well, there are three questions that we can ask in this regard, and there are three answers that we can give to prove that we are Panditamanagya, as is Bali Maharaj Panditamanagya. Not that we wish to be worshipped, but that we wish to establish clearly that this curse that he'd lose all his opulences is not applicable to him. So three questions. First question is that can the Lord ever become a debtor or a beggar? Can the Lord ever become a debtor or a beggar? We see in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and actually it's good to take shelter of these things at this time of year, because this is the time of year when the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really become so manifest in our lives. Tomorrow is Advaitacharya's appearance day. Next week is Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day. A few weeks after that, there was some time leading up to the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a very wonderful time to focus on Krishna, Chaitanya Leela. Become absorbed in this. So if we turn to Chaitanya Leela, we can answer this question, does the Lord ever become a debtor or a beggar, by understanding one particular situation that happened with Sri Advaita Acharya. Sri Advaita Acharya, he had one secretary. who was named Kamala what? Vishwas. Kamala Kanta Vishwas. He was his secretary. And because he was his secretary, he knew all like the intimate dealings that Dvaitacharya had. And so on one instance, this Kamala Kanta Vishwas, he wrote a note to the king of Puri. Now I assume that he was writing this note to the king of Puri because the devotees would regularly be visiting Puri every year for the Rath Yatra. Obviously, Dvaitacharya and most of the devotees, they lived in Bengal, Mayapur, Navadvip, Shantipur, which is some distance from Puri, different kingdom. So I imagine that he was writing this note to the king of Puri because of some circumstances that had happened during the stay of the devotees in Puri for the Rath Yatra. So in this note, he wrote that Sri Dvaitacharya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He wrote like that, establishing this fact. But the note also said that Dvaitacharya has a debt of 300 rupees, and so will you please absolve him of this debt? He was writing to the king like that. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita says that no one knew of this note, but somehow or another, that note came into the hands of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when he read it, he was very unhappy. He was very unhappy because even though Kamala Kanta Vishwas had established that Dvaitacharya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at the same time, he was giving this contradictory message that he's a debtor, that he has this debt of 300 rupees. 300 rupees was quite a large sum of money in those days. Srila Prabhupada explains that even one anna, which is, I think there's 100 anna in one rupee, one anna could feed a family in those days for the whole day. And so 300 rupees was a large sum of money. And so when he was saying that Dvaitacharya was a debtor, it wasn't like us, you know, I owe you 300 rupees, okay, you know, it's easy to pay. It was quite a large sum of money. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very upset that this was written like this. And so therefore he told his servant Govinda that don't let this Kamala Kanta Vishwas come here anymore, because he's written like this. This is offensive to say that the Supreme Lord is a debtor. How can the Supreme Lord be a debtor? Everyone is dependent upon him for everything that they have. So how is the Lord a debtor? Actually, in the purport in that section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada talks about Vamandeva also, and his Vamandeva coming and begging from Bali Maharaj, pointing out that Vamandeva wasn't a beggar. He didn't need what Bali Maharaj had to give him. Actually, what Bali Maharaj had was his. And so he makes the point that one should never consider the Lord to be a beggar in need. And so this idea that Dvaitacharya had a debt and it needed to be paid was very displeasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so Dvaitacharya, upon hearing of the Lord's displeasure in this regard, he instructed Kamala Kanta Vishwas, and actually he made an appeal on Kamala Kanta Vishwas's behalf to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And upon hearing that appeal, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu let him come back in his association with Kamala Kanta Vishwas. But that kind of bewildered Dvaitacharya, because he was saying, well, how come you're giving him such mercy? You're letting him come back. You didn't treat me like this. And so there was some exchange back and forth. But the point being, and the instruction given, is that the Lord is not a debtor. He can never be a debtor. Rather, everyone is indebted to him. And so this first question, concerning the subject matter of whether Bali Maharaj is rightly punished or not, is answered in that, no, the Lord can't be a debtor. He's actually the benefactor of everyone. So Bali Maharaj is not incorrect in giving all of his so-called opulence back to the Lord, because that is the rightful, he is the rightful owner of that. So that's the first question. But there are two other questions. The other question is a devotee a materialistic person? Is a devotee a materialistic person, just like anybody else? Again, we're talking about opulence. So materialistic persons, they like to display their opulence. So if we see a devotee who has material opulences displaying him those such opulences, does that disqualify that devotee in some way? So is a devotee a materialistic person? To answer this, we can go to yesterday. We're talking about Advaitacharya. We go to tomorrow. To answer this question, we can go to yesterday. Yesterday was the appearance or disappearance of Pundarik Vijayaniti. I know it was the disappearance of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'm not sure whether it was the appearance or disappearance. Appearance of Sri Pundarik Vijayaniti. Sri Pundarik Vijayaniti, in Krishna Leela, he is Vrishabhanu Maharaj, father of Srimati Radharani. And in Chaitanya Leela, Pundarik Vijayaniti was a very, very wealthy man. A very opulent man. And there's an interesting incident that took place concerning Pundarik Vijayaniti and Sri Gadadhar Pandit, which helps us understand this question about, is a devotee a materialist? Is an opulent devotee a materialist? Mukunda Dutt was a great friend of Gadadhar Pandit, and one time he informed him that a very great devotee had come to Navadvip. And they were in the habit, Pundarik, Mukunda Dutt, and Gadadhar Pandit, of always going and seeing Vaishnavas and visiting them, hearing from them. They always were anxious to do that. And so when Mukunda Dutt told Gadadhar that this great devotee had come to Navadvip, they naturally wanted to go see him. And Mukunda was encouraging, come, let's go. So they went, and they approached this very big, large palatial building. And when they entered that building, they saw there were all the finest appointments in that building. Silken drapes, very valuable furniture. And then finally they met Pundarik Vijayaniti, who was dressed in the very finest silks, who had his hair very nicely arranged and perfumed with scented oils. And he sat them down in a very comfortable seating arrangement and greeted them very nicely. And all of this raised some doubt in the mind of Gadadhar Pandit. He was thinking that, well, I thought we were going to see a Vaishnava. How is the Vaishnava having all this opulence? At least I heard Radhanath Swami describe how Pundarik would be looking in the mirror at his beautiful face. I don't know if that's there in the Chaitanya Bhagavata or not, but anyway, Radhanath Swami is saying like that. So how is this person a devotee, a Vaishnava? Vaishnava is not like this, enjoying opulence like that. So he had some doubt in his mind. So Mukunda Dutt, he was very intelligent. He could understand this doubt was there. And so he began to quote one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a verse about Putana, how Putana was approached Krishna with such evil intent, but that Krishna was so merciful that he liberated Putana and gave her a position, eternal position in the spiritual world, as one of his mothers. And when Pundarik Vidyaniti heard this verse, of course, Mukunda Dutt, his brother was Vasudev Dutt, and they're known for doing very melodious kirtan, the Dutt brothers. And so when he sang this verse very nicely, very so sweetly, Pundarik Vidyaniti went mad. He just started swooning in ecstasy, and tears like rivers flowing from his eyes, soaking all of his silk clothing, and the silk bedstead where he was sitting. And his body began trembling, and he started rolling back and forth. He finally fell on the ground. He was kicking his arms, completely mad in ecstasy. And Gadadhar Pandit's watching this. He said, "Oh my God, what's happening?" Then finally, after thrashing around and tearing his clothes and kicking the furniture this way and that way, finally, the ecstasy came to the point where he just passed out unconscious. Completely unconscious. He had in ecstasy. So when Gadadhar Pandit saw this reaction that Pundarik Vidyaniti had simply to hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, he could understand, actually, this is not some false show, but this is actually a very, very great devotee. Very, very great devotee of the Lord. Even though he was in such a materially opulent condition of life, it was not a disqualification for his being a devotee of the Lord. So a devotee is not a materialistic person, even if they're found in the greatest opulence. Actually, Gadadhar Pandit was so so sorry that he had committed the offense in his mind of thinking that this great devotee was a materialist, that he said the only way he could make up for that was to take initiation from him. And so he took initiation from Pundarik Vidyaniti in the Vaishnava mantra. And Pundarik Vidyaniti was very happy, saying that he was very fortunate himself to get such a disciple as a Gadadhar Pandit. So is a devotee a materialist? No, a devotee is not a materialist, even though he may be found in the situation of great wealth. So that also helps us try to answer this question about Bali Maharaj. Was he correctly cursed or not? Then the final question we have to answer is a devotee a poor man? Is a devotee affected by poverty? Pundarik Vidyaniti was not affected by wealth, but devotees are poor. You know, are we satisfied being poor? Is that what we are? We're poor people? Is a devotee a poor man? Well, to answer this question, we have to look at the Lord's interaction with Kolavecha Sridhar. Kolavecha Sridhar was a poor man. Was he? He was a poor man. Everyone knew. He had his house, the thatched roof had holes in it. He had some little business where he made banana leaf cups. He didn't make him much money. Actually, his neighbors were upset because Kolavecha Sridhar, at night, he would get up early in the morning and he would chant very loudly the Hare Krishna mantra. And all the neighbors became upset because they were saying, this poor man, he can't get enough to eat, and he's just howling because his belly is empty. And so he's causing such a disturbance. This is how they thought about Kolavecha Sridhar. He was a poor man. Every day, Kolavecha, he would take his meager banana cup plates and leaves You'd go to the marketplace to sell them. But because he was a devotee, he wasn't so much concerned about money. He didn't do like most merchants do. They're anxious to haggle over the price, you know. You go shopping in India, you know, it's like some rasa, some enjoyment that people are like, oh, let's fight over the price, you know, price of this way or that way, you know. He didn't like that, so therefore he had a fixed price for his things. It was fair, but it was a fixed price. He didn't like to hassle like that. But he had one customer who could never be satisfied. Gauranga Mahaprabhu would come to him every day, and he would hassle. You know, this poor man, he didn't have any money. Everyone knew he was a poor man. But Lord Chaitanya used to come there, and he used to hassle with him every day. He'd barter with him. No, he complained. You're charging too much. I'll give you half the price for that. And Kolavitra Shiar, he also had some little vegetables he would sell. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he'd come and he'd take the vegetable and say, no, I'll give you half the price you're asking. And Kolavitra, sometimes he would try to take it back from him, and they would be tussling, you know, with Lord Chaitanya, he'd be tussling with the vegetable or pulling it one way or another. And all the people would gather around to watch, you know, the fun every day. This would be going on. So Lord Chaitanya had this relationship with him where he would, you know, hassle him. And it came to the point where, and I want to read this exchange because it's very humorous. Came to the point where ultimately, even though he was such a poor man, selling such meager things, that the Lord would get him to give it to him for free. As they conversed, Sri Gaurasundar played with the bananas, setting them back down on the ground and then laughing, picking them up again. Sridhar then said, please listen to me, Thakur. I am your dog, so kindly forgive me. You don't have to pay anything. Take it for free. Mahaprabhu replied, you are very clever, Sridhar. By selling bananas, you have become quite wealthy. Then Sridhar, as if to get rid of him, asked, my dear Thakur, are there no other stores in this bazaar? There are so many. But what is that to me? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is replying, there are so many, but what is that to me? You are my regular supplier. Why should I give you up? Yes, yes, dear Thakur, now I fall down at your feet. I am defeated by you. For from today, I will give you what you want. You can take things for free. But you'll give me just old rotten things, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Dear Thakur, why should I give you bad vegetables? Then it is all right. Very well, that sounds very good. So this is how they would exchange every day. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this poor man, beating him down to where he got it for free. How is he going to live? So is a devotee poor? Is a devotee poor? Kolavitra Sridhar's conclusion is, though, he said, he doesn't go to any other shop in the market, but comes only to me. I am so fortunate. So although he was a very poor man, and by the way, whatever he made, half he gave to worship of the Ganges anyway. The rest of the half was for his family. But he wasn't poor. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the possessor of all opulences, would come to him every day and engage in some kind of humorous exchange with him. So was he poor? Was he a poor man? No, he was never a poor man. And so the Lord is not a debtor. He's not a beggar. A devotee is not a materialist, even though he may be given great opulence by the Lord. That opulence is different, as explained in the purport here today. It was never vanquished. Such opulence is never vanquished. And even if the devotee is in a very, very poor condition of life, he's satisfied, more satisfied than a wealthy person, because he knows he has a Supreme Lord within his heart, and he engages in these loving exchanges with the Lord. So this is the position of Bali Maharaj. This is why he is Pandita Manyagya, so learned that other people learned people take shelter of him, because he knows these things. He's not Panditamani, that he's so falsely learned on some false basis or some sentiment he's giving away everything. No, he's giving it away on the basis of understanding these three things about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he's not liable for this curse, Achirad Brashyase Shriyaha, that he should be bereft of all his opulence. And actually, we'll see later in this pastime that when Bali Maharaj's position is proven, that then the finger turns to Sukracharya to say why, what was the fault in your disciple that you have cursed him like this. In other words, he's also going to be held accountable, and we'll see that later in the pastime. So are there any comments or questions about these subject matters? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. You made your argument based on the term devotee in general, and Srila Prabhupada precedes the word devotee with many other adjectives that disqualify the devotee. You're referring, I assume, to a pure devotee. Is that correct?
Well, there's a lot of different meanings to the word pure when we talk about pure devotee. So it's kind of hard to answer the question in terms of what I might answer it in terms of what I understand is meant by the word pure, and you might answer it by what you understand by the word pure. So rather than, you know, getting into those kind of distinctions, let's just leave it devotee. Now, does the Lord deal with his devotees in this way? Sridhar, Kodavija Sridhar, Pundrik Vijanidhi, Tamalakanta Vishwas. We've seen how he deals with them. What about how he deals with us? Is it different? I don't know that it is so different. And I don't think it is so different. We're also supposed to understand the Lord's position and be satisfied. One of the things that can be said about all the devotees, let's just take the devotees sitting in this room. Most of the devotees sitting in this room, they've been devotees for 20, 30 years or something like that, or they're born in a movement, they never knew anything else in their life. Why are they still here? Why are they still here after so many years? Because they have a degree of the same kind of satisfaction with whatever condition in life that they have that Kolavitra Sridhar displayed. Otherwise, why are they still here? It's not that devotees are unintelligent persons, that they can't make it in the world like that. That's not true. Well, why are they still sitting here instead of sitting someplace else? Why have they, you know, sat there and then come back here? Because they have a certain degree of satisfaction like Kodavik Sridhar has. We also find in our community here people that are very opulent. I mean, we actually are witness, personal witness to, like, in my opinion, one of the, you know, like a miracle of how a devotee thinks and acts. Just like Ambarish Prabhu. Now, Ambarish Prabhu is like an amazing person. Here's a person that is so wealthy, so influential, the family he comes in and everything like that. Yet, he comes here, you know, and he just, like, he takes the ghee lamp around. You know, he always tried to do some little service like this and that. I mean, why is he doing that? Because in his heart, he's not thinking that I'm a materialistic person, the big wealthy person like that. He acts in such a way you'd never know this person is like that. He's an amazing person, really. And he gives, is not attached to his wealth, he gives so greatly. I mean, this is not normal. It's not normal. And so that's an example we have right in our own community here of devotee like Pundrik Vijanidhi. So I don't know that it's so different. Now, you know, I'm not saying that Ambarish can't be considered a pure devotee. He is probably a pure devotee. Or anybody else, any of you aren't pure devotees. But the point is that let's not worry about what pure means, this and that. Just look at how the Lord and these devotees are interacting that we see on a daily basis right here. Well, at least they're still hanging on the edge. Can I get me a phone?
Lord Chaitanya became angry that his devotee was considered a debtor, that Advaitacharya was considered a debtor. But Krishna tells the gopis that he cannot repay them for their austerities in coming to him in the dead of night. So Krishna considers himself a debtor to the devotees, but he doesn't want anyone else to consider a devotee to be a debtor. Is that...
Yeah. He's an amazing person, Krishna. Yeah, he thinks of himself as a debtor, but... to his loved ones. Yes, Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. Very, very interesting class. Devotee is a Vaishnava. And a Vaishnava is in a very, very special category. Even from the lowest to the highest, really. And like within the purport, really, when the Lord, there's a sentence there, when one is favored by the Lord or something like that, that he doesn't have to fear anything. We know there's different grades of devotees, you know, in different levels, and but still they're in a special position than any other practitioners of religiosity. See, Vaishnava is special.
Yes, true, very true. Let's see, anyway, on that side. Yes.
I didn't understand what's the answer for the third question. Is a devotee poor?
Is a devotee poor? Devotee is never poor because he has a Supreme Personality of Godhead that comes to him and engages in kind of loving exchanges with him. And so he's never poor in that regard. And as it said in the purport here today, that anyone cared for by Lord Vishnu does not need to care about anyone else. And so obviously, Kolavesha Sridhar was cared for by the Supreme Lord because he's come to him every day. He was his regular supplier, and he would engage in exchanges with him every day. So he didn't need to worry about anything else because he had the Lord coming to him.
Yeah, I guess also it depends on consciousness, because I have one little realization about poor or rich. So, for example, it depends on our consciousness, those who are interacting with this person. For example, there is many instances about if you come to the house of the poor person, and if you feel that that person, he ready to give you everything little they have, and you kind of have a feeling that it's a rich house. And another example, if you come to the rich person, and even though he has fancy cars, fancy house, but if you come and you feel that this person needs something because he's not willing to give anything. So it depends, even though it might be very rich person, but he might be very poor. At the same time, a poor person, it depends on consciousness, he willing to give everything, like... everything, and the feelings of that person who comes to that person, he feels it's a very opulent house.
Yes. That's how everyone should feel when they meet a devotee. The devotee is ready to give everything to them. Yes, well, let's see. No, still anything there? Okay. Dhanaraj. One more.
Regarding Bali Maharaj's guru, warning him and thus cursing him. Just one thing that came to my mind about the position of authority in our lives, that Sukracharya's position was one of authority in Bali Maharaj's life. And even though it wasn't, from what we can see, like a perfect in the sense that what he advised Bali Maharaj to do, and because Bali Maharaj went against his advice, and we actually see that, yes, he did become poor at least for a certain time. So my point is that, like, we in our society and even with our regular lives, that we have certain authorities, temple president, GBC, our parents, even though those positions of authority mightn't be perfectly fulfilled by those personalities, but it has a level of weight in there that if disobeyed, then reaction can be there. Can you comment on that?
No. Pushkar's going to comment on it. Now, then that'll be it.
Just a really good class, but just a question about this identity question of Basu Mukunda Dutt, whether he's the brother of
Basudeva Dutt.
I don't know if there's actually brothers. Basu Ghosh, they were the singers.
They were the singers.
Mukunda was a singer, but I'm not sure if he's related. That's all.
Mukunda was. But Mukunda was a singer also.
Yeah, but I don't. Basu Ghosh, Sanjaya, like three brothers, but I don't think they're Dutts and Ghoshes.
So Mukunda doesn't have a brother who's a singer.
I don't think they're related, but Mukunda Dutt and Basudev Dutt, separate person. Mm-hmm. But it could be easily conflated, maybe, but I just wondering.
I think I heard that when I heard that when Radha Swami was describing it, but I'll check and let you know. I'll listen to that this morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.